Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined once again by a full crew of Bo. Hello, Bo.
Hey, Pat.
We're getting that name and the voice together. Tracy, how you doing, Tracy?
Hello, Pat.
And my trusty co-host, Cody Thompson. Hi, Cody.
Hello, Pat. I'm trying to sound like Tracy just to confuse the listeners.
You have me fooled. And then we've got Matt and Karen in house. Karen's birthday today. International birthday. Karen Day. Woo, woo. So, Cody, what are we talking about today?
The never-ending meeting.
That's right. The never-ending meeting, which sounds like a criticism of meetings. Normally it would. But today it's actually a good thing, what we're going to talk about, which by never-ending meetings, we're talking about what we call progressive meetings, which comes from the idea of a progressive party, that party that doesn't end. It goes to the next person's house, then the next person's house, because we've figured out something here at the table group. Our best meetings are the ones that we have that keep going until we've actually gotten all the input we need and figured things out. And that's what we're going to talk about today, a really good kind of meeting that doesn't necessarily end, but people love it, like a party.
It'll be so fun to talk about why we do this and like some of the benefits of it. I wonder first if it's helpful just to give listeners some context. This literally happened yesterday, Pat. So describe for us what the context is, or like what that looks like when we have a progressive meeting.
So it goes like this. So, and I'll put a little color around it. So let's say there's three of us here and we're like, hey, we should have a meeting and talk about something and figure something out. And we go, yeah, but Bo and Cody aren't here. And we go, no, let's just start the meeting now and have it. Then we'll invite them in afterward and show them where we are. We'll represent to them what we've done already and then ask them for their input. And that'll give us a fresh, and we might say, let's call Bo in, and then we'll talk to Bo for 20 minutes and he'll give his input, and then we'll adjust our idea. Then we'll bring it to Cody at a different stage and he'll provide that. Whereas if we were all there for the whole time, it's harder to get fresh perspectives and it's harder to build on the initial idea. And also we might have to wait too long before everybody's available. So we've gotten pretty good around here about being quick and dirty and going, let's just go into a room for a half hour and figure this out. And then bring other people in. And it might be a series of three progressive meetings. And the answer is almost always better.
I think it's worth at this stage, like when people hear that, they're probably like, oh boy, what are you recommending here? Like, we want fewer meetings and not more meetings, but this is really not, it sounds like we're saying, oh, well, just piecemeal a meeting together. But what happens actually in that is a faster decision-making process and a more, and it clarifies it at every stage, you know? So it's not just a, hey, have a one-on-one meeting and then progressively add other people in. But it's like you mentioned, hey, if they're not there, let's see how far we can get in 20 minutes and then we can bring other people in as we go.
So yesterday I was on a long call and it went way over and I couldn't leave it. And I was supposed to be in on a meeting with you guys and Joe, our new guy. And so what happened? I couldn't join the meeting. So you should cancel it and reschedule, right? Nope. What did you guys do, Bo?
Yeah, we just said my favorite words, start the meeting now. Let's just start the conversation now and we'll bring Pat in. And what I find happens when we don't do that is the momentum around the idea really suffers. But when we just take the momentum that's happening around, let's just have the conversation now. And what's so wonderful is, Pat, you don't get your feelings hurt or feel like, oh, I'm the founder, I should be in every meeting, because your discernment is still going to be welcome after we've done a little bit of assembly and talking about it and uncovering layers and figuring out what we should say no to.
Right. And yesterday I was bummed because my meeting went way over and I got out and I said to Joe, okay, let's do the fun meeting now. And he goes, oh, we already had it without you. And I was like, oh, bummer. And so he said, let me show you what we did. And then I said, okay, let's get Cody and Bo on and do another 15 minutes. Just so I'll react to what I see here and present my ideas. And we got on there. You guys weren't like, oh, dude, it's already over. We don't need your input. You said, okay, what do you think? And we pushed it a little bit forward. And it was fun. It got it done. And we didn't postpone things. We didn't wait. It wasn't boring. It was quick, dirty, fun. And it kept going until we had the right answer.
Now, one of the things that I struggle with in progressive meetings is resetting the context, because my brain can be kind of linear and literal. And so we'll got to a certain point and it's harder for me to back up and start all over. But Cody is a master at this. Mm. And I'm curious, Cody, I didn't tell you I was going to ask you this. Like, what's your secret sauce when you're having a progressive meeting? You say, let's invite Tracy in. How are you thinking about bringing that person along to where you are?
Thousand Island Dressing is always the secret sauce.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm sorry, Cody. Go ahead.
No, I actually, one of the benefits I actually feel like in this concept of progressive meetings is that it forces the person who's retelling what we said in the previous meeting to get really clear about what problem we were solving and what we thought might be the right solutions and what we said no to and yes to. So it's actually an exercise in sort of clarifying and codifying and, like, in a succinct way, bringing another person along. And for what it's worth, you know, this is not the Working Genius podcast, but we talk about it enough on this podcast that I think it will help clarify. Is I sometimes go back to one, I'd go through the Working Genius in a way of, as a way of resetting the context for the decisions we're making. So I'll say, hey, in the wonders phase, like, hey, here's the problem we were trying to solve, Pat. And then we came up with these solutions in the invention stage. Like, maybe we should pursue this partner, or maybe this would be a good way for us to try to get, you know, this product out there. And then what I like to do, which is really helpful in a progressive meeting, is you don't just say what you said yes to. A lot of times people think, like, well, let me just tell you the end of the story. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, then we decided we'll pursue these people. You really have to say, here's what we said no to and why. So we kind of explored this way, and then we said no to that. And so it kind of brings them along to the narrative portion of the story in a succinct way, and then invites their discernment at that phase, and they get to jump in, and that's where the progressive meeting starts.
Exactly. And I think that the forced discipline of having to re-present it and re-explain things helps the people that were in the first meeting go, oh, wait a second. Oh, yeah, I guess that even before you bring the next person in, just the re-describing it helps you reevaluate your idea and go, wait, maybe that doesn't make sense, which is totally fine. In fact, and so the discipline of having to re-explain things a few times allows you to hone your idea much better than if you only had one idea. So Joe, our new guy, he's been in corporate America for 25 years working at big companies. And he came to a few of these meetings recently. He's been here a week and a half. And he was like, is this how you guys make decisions? And we're like, yeah. And he said, where I came from, we would have to schedule a meeting and then 3 weeks later, schedule another one and 3 weeks later. And I honestly believe what we do here by having progressive meetings is we have 3 weeks of meetings in one day by staggering the number of people that come in. It's kind of like when I write a book, Tracy will read it and edit with me. And then a few of the people in the office won't read it. And then we let them read it for the first time. And it's like a whole new person, a whole new process. And in three days, we can get the kind of editing done that if it were just Tracy and I and a few other people rereading it every 3 weeks, that we would need that kind of space for the perspective.
And I'll say this, you know, Bo, you were in the first meeting with me and Joe. And by the time Pat got there, it actually was, we had clarified what the problem was even more succinctly and clearly. Like, it, you know, it actually helps even the people who were in the first meeting to say, oh, we kind of knew what problem we were solving. But as we get into the progressive meeting, you have to get more clear and more succinct. And so it is both beneficial, not just to the person that's joining, but to the original group, and helps you totally hone in on what the right decisions are going to be made in that next step.
And when we do this in a progressive way, and what you're hearing is literally progressive. That day it was like, bang, bang, bang. And that's very common for us to say, let's get Karen in here. Let's get Matt or Julie in here to keep this conversation. Or they'll do the same thing to us. I also came from a different environment before where the norm was, okay, I'm going to go back and make a PowerPoint pitch deck, and I'm going to design some things in Canva, and and what happens is I get more and more invested in my half-baked ideas. So yes, what I'm doing in a progressive meeting is inviting discernment, inviting buy-in, inviting, did we ask the right question? Have we said, rather than trying to skip to galvanizing. And in fact, I think the worst progressive meetings are when we are skipping right to trying to galvanize people rather than saying, here's this kind of ugly baby. here's this kind of idea that we would you weigh in on it? Would you tell us what you see?
Yeah, and you have permission to reinvent if you like.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And like Karen wrote me a great note, and that is that this seems inefficient to somebody looking at it from the outside. They'd see like, well, that's kind of a, but it's messy and effective, and it really saves time. So many things that are effective look like they're wasting time, but they actually save weeks of time because you just don't have to constantly reiterate. You can do it quickly.
Yeah. And I'll say this, you know, Pat, you jumped in for the second 15-minute meeting of this conversation we were having yesterday, and it got better, you know, like our ideas got better. And I think what's interesting is like, if you think about this in the worst case scenario of a progressive meeting is you catch someone up and they're like, actually, I think you guys, that's great. I think we should move forward with that plan. Mm-hmm. It very rarely gets worse. The only thing that happens is it's either a communication thing where it's like, oh yeah, I think you guys discerned all the right things and got to the right answer, or it's just communication, or it gets better. It very rarely is a waste of time. You know, it's never like, oh hey, let's go on a rabbit trail outside of this, because you've already sort of codified what you're trying to solve, told them what solutions we'd presented and didn't do, and then moved into where we're at and invited more discernment.
Yeah, because when I sat down with Joe and he goes, hey, let me catch up on what we did, had it been crystal clear to me, I'd have been like, awesome, here, we're ready mm-hmm. to go. And my first thought was, did you guys land the plane? And he was like, oh, I don't know if we landed it. I said, hey, let's get on for 15 minutes and land the plane. Whereas I would have, if I had been in that first meeting with you, I'd have probably come to the exact same place you were and not notice that we didn't land the plane. So bringing that mm-hmm. new person in just makes it better. Oh, but that's so not good. Because I want to come in and add value. It's just, if I see something that we didn't do, I can raise a new issue and we can go a little further. So it's not about being inclusive or democratic and having everybody vote. It's about staggering people's input so it's more effective and quicker.
And the thing that's underlaying all of that is an environment where we trust each other. Because, mm-hmm. Pat, as you've said so many times, when we trust each other, that conflict, that getting in there, that messiness, that whiteboard, it's in pursuit of not my idea. It's not trying to convince, it's in pursuit of the best idea. And it can feel a little vulnerable, can't it? To bring somebody into a progressive meeting and be like, okay, I'm going to try saying this again. But in an environment where you trust each other, you're like, oh, these are my people. These are my teammates. They're going to help make sure we're headed in the right direction.
Yeah, because if they point out something that you didn't do, you're like thanking them. You're not like, oh no, they might slow us down. It's like, no, if you need to slow us down because we missed something, thank God for that. And that's going to speed us up.
And I will say this, I love that point, Bo, is around the environment. And I was just thinking like every company has sort of a culture around their meetings. So Joe's company's culture around their meetings was, everybody's got to be there and we have to schedule it 3 weeks out and we're not going to make decisions without other people in the room. Or their culture is, boy, if I'm not invited to that meeting, that hurts me because that might even be in my area of expertise mm-hmm. or my domain. And what we've done is sort of stripped out those cultural elements around meetings to be like, Pat, you should have been in that first meeting, but we're not going to wait and reschedule that for later. And that what that doesn't do is cause you any frustration or feelings of isolation. It's like, hey, we actually know we're going to do 15 more minutes with you at any point and move that even further.
You know, I just realized this in real time that for those of us that are not in the same location, that we're working on Zoom calls and it's we're virtual, this allows people, like if three people are in an office and they're like, hey, I want to talk about this, we should probably have Cody on there. What's his schedule look like? Where is he? Can he join us right now? We can now say, well, let's just have the meeting. We're not excluding him. We'll bring him in later or tomorrow or this afternoon when he's available. And it just allows us to be much more nimble. Mm-hmm. You know, two people can have a meeting and go, we're not leaving them out. They're not going to feel hurt. We're actually going to get the ball rolling. And then they're going to join us when they join. And so I think this means things move a lot faster. And that's what Joe said. He goes, man, you guys make decisions in like a half a day that we would have done over the period of a month.
Now, if you're listening to this and you just can't even get your head around what this could look like, it just occurred to me, Pat, you write about this in one of your books. It's in the Six Types of Working Genius book. You actually lay out in the fable somebody who's a team who's having a progressive meeting, that an idea happens and then somebody else stops by and they're like, let's recontextualize this idea and tell you about it. And then somebody else comes, the meeting.
And I forgot about that. Because that's why we thought we had already done a podcast on this. Because I was like, I know I've written about this. Maybe, Matt, maybe in the show notes, you can put the page numbers in there where somebody could actually see one of these progressive meetings. I really think progressive meetings have made a massive difference in our company. And I think we adopted this. Tracy, you know better than I do. But there, I remember we started talking about these formally years ago. And now it's become part of the daily way we get things done.
Yeah. And I would say, like you said, Pat, about the virtual thing, I think we've had to master it because we are a virtual company, or some of us are virtual. So right. I think, and I would say in the last 2 or 3 years, we've really mastered the art of the progressive meeting.
Right. We don't have to wait till we're on the same Zoom call. We don't have to wait till we're all together.
You know, I'm the person that always thinks in the working genius methodology, and I apologize that I'm constantly galvanizing that here, but I do think it actually freed us up in a way where the idea that sometimes when we were having strategic meetings, the implication is we're going to go in a room and we should come out with an answer that is fully formed and we're going to galvanize. You know, so we move from discernment to galvanizing. And what working genius has done is actually allowed us the freedom to say, hey, even though that meeting is over, we're still in the discernment phase of what we're going to do as it relates to that like strategic meeting. And so it's easy to jump someone into there and let them play around in that phase. But if you end meetings with the idea of like, it's sort of like a wet cement end of the meeting, right? We're like, hey, I think we're in pretty good shape. And if we moved in this direction, it'd be great. But let's get a little bit more discernment and buy-in, and then we'll move fully into the galvanizing phase of this.
Absolutely. It makes you move through that further. So since this is not the podcast, the never-ending podcast, I think we can bring it to a close. But I will say this, there's another podcast we want to do. It might be the next one. It might be the one after that. Something we call horseshoe decision-making, which I think goes hand in hand with this. We've talked about it before in other podcasts, but we're going to do one on how we make decisions in a quick way. And it feeds right into this model. So look forward to that one. But before we end, we need to do an unpaid ad. Right.
Yeah. So we've been talking about these unpaid ads, Pat. And here's the idea, is that you would surprise us today with what is the unpaid ad. And Cody and I have no idea what you are proposing for this unpaid ad. So,
okay, Matt, I think it's best that a 24-year-old announces this, because if I do it, people are going to think, you know, we're going to do Metamucil next. So, Matt, what is the unpaid ad for?
Well, I can't speak to its efficacy as much as you can, but CPAP machines.
CPAP machines. That's right. It's not just for grandpa anymore. You know, if you don't know what a CPAP machine is, it's for people that have sleep apnea, have a hard time sleeping. And, you know, it looks like this amazing contraption from the future. And you go to bed at night and you put this hose on your face. And I wake up feeling refreshed. And I can't say enough for what an amazing discovery it has been. And I think there's a lot of wives in the world who will say, this has changed their marriage, because so many, women snore too, but I was waking up every morning after snoring and feeling like I was going to die. And the CPAP machine has been great for me. A lot younger people are getting diagnosed with this. So you youngsters out there, don't scoff.
I love it.
I think when you said a lot of wives out there will agree to this being an unpaid advertisement, all I can think of is how actually I was going to make an intimacy joke, but I probably shouldn't do that.
You don't wear it all the time.
CPAP machines for sleeping. There you go.
But it is pretty amazing to think that somebody solved this problem. I mean, I know I don't want to be too serious here, but apnea is a huge problem. It affects your heart. It affects people's lives. Yeah. And somebody came up with an idea, and they're making them smaller now. We actually met the guy. Remember we went on a mission trip to Mexico, and there was a guy there who goes, yeah, I invented this part of the machine. Wow. And it has saving people's lives. And we like to make jokes about it because it looks so silly, and my kids will come in and it'll be on and they'll make jokes. But darn it, CPAP, it's a wonderful invention.
I love it.
All right. Hey, thanks for joining us on, we'll do a young person's unpaid ad next time. But thanks for joining us, everybody, on At the Table, and we'll look forward to talking to you next time. God bless.